delighted to have Dr. Pindile Masangani, who's the Chief Executive of Petroleum Agency South Africa. It's a big story, this shale gas in the Karoo, and Dr. Masangani will be shining some light on the, well, the Light v. Herzog arguments. Just by way of background, Dr. Masangani got her PhD in chemistry from Imperial College London. She has an MBA from Wits University, eminently qualified. But maybe before we start, though, the agency itself, a key part of the role that for our discussion today is resource allocation and promotion of South Africa's energy. So I guess the Karoo shale gas, if it exists, if it doesn't exist, is firmly in your ambit.
Yes, our key mandate as the Petroleum Agency, as a PASA, is to evaluate the country's petroleum resource and advise the government on where these resources are, how much of them we have, how best can we manage them for the benefit of all South Africans. As you know, our constitution says that these petroleum resources and other resources, natural resources that we have as a country, belong to all of us, and therefore the government only manages them on behalf of its citizens.
And your role as the CEO of this organization, I guess, puts you right in the middle of so many conflicting interests. People say our country is corrupt, everything's corrupted, everybody gets bribed. Do you have to counter these allegations as well?
The concerns by our citizenship, by our citizens in terms of corruption, in terms of misuse of resources, is actually one that not only applies in the energy sector, Alec, we've seen it in the last few years playing out even in terms of state capture. Our role as the Petroleum Agency is to evaluate any application for a license, whether it's for exploration or production of these resources, and to evaluate that application in strict terms that are outlined in the MPRDA. What are those terms, Alec? We have to make sure that technically the person is putting in a sound proposal. Secondly, that the area is not encumbered, i.e. we have not allocated the area for someone else to do exploration and production on. We have to make sure that the person has got the technical capability to do the exploration that they want to do. Lastly, we have to make sure that they've got the financial capability. And we as PASA are on record as saying any citizen of this country can hold us to account for every decision that we make and any recommendation that we make to Minister Mandashe to whether approve a license or decline a license. And many a times people have asked for our reasons for decision, we're able to lay them bare on the table. So I'm happy to say that I'm leading an institution which has never been found to be involved in any corruption of any sort.
Now, the big story. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, we've got lots and lots of shale gas reserves, which is being questioned, brought into question in the debate over the past week. Where would they get this information from?
There are different stages of resource evaluations that get to be used. The first one is desktop research. So based on historic information from other countries, as well as our geological information, info scientific information, different institutions then use this information, compile it to make estimates of shale gas and other conventional resources of natural gas and oil. So the first step in terms of evaluation is really around desktop. It's around available information databases that they are on geological formations. The next step then requires more detailed studies, which we call geological basin modeling, which then says for this specific area, because the first step, which was the desktop, may be sometimes based from a global information. So now you start to narrow down and say, okay, in this area, what really happened to the geology? And how then can we refine the first estimate or the desktop research estimate? And now you start to refine it to your specific area. Now you start getting more accurate information. The next step, of course, is that The first two are based on old information that is available, old scientific information that's available. You then need to collect site-specific data, which can be in the form of seismic data or any other geoscientific data. That tells you what is happening today, because the first two is based on historic information. It's quite possible that the gas or the oil has extremely matured and therefore evaporated out of the area. So the current data is what helps you to come closer to what is happening today. Lastly, Alec, me and you can argue whether the desktop research helps citizens of countries, whether the basin modeling helps us. Ultimately, Alec, it's about drilling. Someone must drill a hole in that area, and that person then will be able to flow the oil or gas to surface, and now we only then can we have certainty. So the Energy Information Administration of the U.S. was using data of the world geology, and it came to this estimate. You can't say to them they're wrong or right. It's the estimate based on the methodology they've used. I'm happy, Alec, to tell your viewers today that as the Petroleum Agency, in line with our mandate, we have finished our basin modeling and we will be publishing this. I shared one or two of our graphs with you already. And because of the basin modeling that we have now done, we've got better insights around our resource availability compared to what the Energy Information Administration of the U.S. has. It's not that we are saying they are wrong. We are saying that information was based on desktop research. We have now refined that, and we have actually modeled how our geology would have behaved over the last so many millions of years. And now we've got a model. And therefore, we've got better data. So unlike them who are saying we've got 390 TCF, we believe that we've got around 200 TCF of shale gas available in the Karoo.
That's a very big story. The United States, and we know that the whole U.S. energy equation, and they're an economy more than 25 times bigger than South Africa's, their shale gas has transformed the energy equation in the United States. If the latest numbers are telling us we have 200, that's just under a third of the US, which for a country the size of the economy of South Africa is incredible.
Alec, that will still be substantial. And therefore, to that point, we are saying as PASA, as the regulatory authority of our upstream oil and gas industry, this is the number that we've refined their 390 estimates to. We've refined it now to about 200 TCF based on basin modeling. What you will also see from other people who publish data in terms of the resource availability in South Africa, they will tell you that, no, we may have had dolerite intrusion. Dolerite intrusion is just a fancy word of saying it's ash that was left by volcanic activity. So they would say that, no, there's a risk that you've got dolerite intrusion. Our basin modeling actually is showing that that dolerite intrusion is likely to be towards the north of the region, not where the shale gas is concentrated. So we have defined a sweet spot where the shale gas is, and we think the risk of that dolerite intrusion is lower. The risk to our number of 200 TCF is, what if that gas has migrated? What if that gas has cooked up and therefore left that shale rock? The only way we can settle this debate is if we do actual drilling and we do actual fracking. Then we know whether or not that gas is still there. But based on our geological modeling, we believe that the gas should still be in place. Our geologists have modeled the Karoo geological basin. They have looked at what would have happened over the millions of years historically. And they have found out that, or they've come to a conclusion that these dolerite intrusions are actually towards the north of this country, and the sweet spot has got little risk of dolerite intrusion. And as you come towards the sweet spot, the dolerite intrusion is actually towards the top of the geology where the shale rock is not. So we believe that within the sweet spot, that dolerite intrusion is not there.
Let's move on to the next big controversial subject about the Karoo, and that's water.
So one of your speakers correctly pointed out that the citizens of this country raised with our government the risk of any contamination of our groundwater from any shale gas exploration activity. So government in 2012 tasked the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, and specifically PASA, and asked us to do a geo-environmental baseline. What is that? Government said to us, PASA, can you help us to better understand the quality and the quantity of our groundwater? So that if we were to license for shale gas, we would know what is the current status of our groundwater. We would also know what is our natural seismic activity that is going on in the subsurface. So we have, over the last 5 years or so, been very deeply involved with our sister company, the Council for Geoscience, CGS, trying to do this geo-environmental baseline study. We already have boreholes which we can access even before we finalize putting in the monitoring network. There are already boreholes from which we are sampling and we are analyzing the status of the groundwater. What is the quality and what is the quantity of that groundwater? But what we're going to do is drill more groundwater boreholes. And you may ask yourself, what are we going to do with the water while we use it for monitoring? Of course, it will enhance the water availability in the Karoo. So the people will be able to use that water. But from our side as a regulator, we'll be able to sample and monitor the status of that water. And that will give us a good baseline for the before and after of the coming into effect of the shale gas program. So just to respond that this geo-environmental baseline study was commissioned and was started because our citizens asked us to do that. They said we did not have enough information against which we will hold the industry players to account. I am glad to tell South Africans that we have started collecting that data. And as we continue with the rest of our licensing frameworks, by the time we finish that, we would have collected that data over a number of seasons and a number of years. The second one, of course, that we are collecting in response to what our stakeholders said is our natural seismic activity. So you will see that we have expanded our seismometer across the Karoo. So currently we are collecting data on our natural seismic activity just to make sure that we understand what is our current status in terms of the ground movement so that when we start the industry, we know whether or not it's having any impact.
You're going to be checking, well, with the seismic activity, which for laymen, is that earthquake?
Yes, except that sometimes people exaggerate what earthquakes are. Alec, right now in the last 5 minutes, you could have had an earthquake under your building, but you wouldn't have noticed. So it's the natural movement of the ground.
Dr. Masangani, it's fantastic, the background you've given us. It's scientific, it's fact. However, we have these two factions, if you like. On the one side, Rob Herzog, who's saying, get on with it. Let's use our natural gas here. Let's get moving in the Karoo. The other faction, Mr. Light, who represents landowners in the Karoo, who says the science is different. There isn't any gas. They don't think there's any gas in the Karoo. He says that you can't go ahead with fracking. Who's right?
Let's first establish and confirm the basin modeling that I said we have done as PASA. And the only way that we can confirm and settle that debate is literally by drilling. There's no other way. Because we have done the geological models, we'll be presenting it to the scientific community, and it would be debated. But everyone knows that it doesn't matter how much basin modeling you've done, unless you've put an actual drill into the ground, you'll always have this uncertainty. Let me give a different example. We know that Namibia has always said that they hold a lot of resources, of petroleum resources. Until Total Energies drilled last year, no one could have confirmed that indeed they have these resources. So they estimate, everyone estimates that we have these resources. And to that point, Namibia's estimates were actually way under. Last year, you will know that actually they made the biggest oil resource discovery that has been made in the world in the last 15 years. But the modeling did not quite ascertain that. And we are saying that as PASA, until we get to a time where we drill, there will always be risks to these numbers. You know, so we've moved down from the 390, We are now at 200. The next step that we are going to do now, Alec, is we are going to collect geophysical data, new data, because all this modeling is based on historic data. So we are going to commission a seismic data acquisition in the Karoo, starting as early as quarter two of next year. And that is going to help us to firm up the basin modeling that we have done. But finally, we must get to the stage where we drill, where we frack. And you can do that responsibly, because you don't just drill 100 wells on the first go. You drill a test well, you frack for the first time, and you see if indeed any gas flows. What we have contributed in terms of the body of knowledge is to define where the sweet spot is. We are likely to have this shale gas in this area. So therefore, the drilling is not going to be irresponsible. The drilling is going to be focused on certain areas where we're going to drill a vertical well, then drill horizontal wells and start to frack. The second thing that our stakeholders complained about, of course, was that we don't have a way of regulating the water use in terms of the Karoo. I'm happy to say that in July last year, the Department of Water and Resources, together with the Department of the Environment, issued new regulations on how we should handle the environment and handle water, so that we make sure that our shale gas exploration and production program has got a minimum impact on the environment. So we do have the regulatory framework. We have defined where the resources is. Let's get on with it as South Africans.
But Mr. Light is saying that if anything happens, he's going to take you to court. He's going to tie you up in the, we're a constitutional democracy. Everything has to go through the courts. Is that not going to delay the process?
Of course, in South Africa, our constitution does allow for someone to take any decision that the government has, that the government makes on legal review. So we do have that right to our citizens. And in my view, Alec, that has really been one of the reasons why we're in the doldrums that we are in South Africa. So, in my assessment, every South African has this right, and the courts then has to take its time to come to the decision. Not only do you can you request for a legal review, but you can also appeal that decision, and you can tell even that decision of the appeal to higher courts. So yes, South Africa does have that risk of delay in terms of us confirming whether we have this resource or not. If any person based on legitimate ground takes us to court. But we have tried to address all the concerns that historically were raised. We have addressed them by putting up the new regulatory framework. We have addressed the concerns by having a baseline study. We are now going to collect the seismic data, which is going to point to us specifically where the drilling might happen, confirm the sweet spot where it is. But there are certain things that people may not be agreeable to, and therefore take us on legal review. Lastly, Alec, my biggest concern on a personal basis is that sometimes people take us to court just because of their ideological beliefs, more than that there's anything wrong with our regulatory framework. You can answer all these questions comprehensively, but people sometimes just take you on legal review simply because they want to stall the process. And what can we do about that? And that's I think that's a challenge for South Africans to answer. It's above my technical capability.
But if all goes well, could you give us a time frame?
As I said, we are doing the seismic data collection. We should be able to go out for an environmental impact assessment of that evaluation. So we will not do it irresponsibly. We will have an EIA process underway starting in quarter two of next year. And once we've got that seismic data, it has to be interpreted, and that will then inform us in terms of the licensing. So we will call for new licenses for people then to apply for exploration rights. And that normally takes about a year for us to evaluate, and they still have to start exploration. So Alec, I want to be realistic in terms of the timelines that unfortunately, as South Africa, this industry is still at nascent stage, it's still at the beginning. So therefore, we will call for the license. My estimate is that we should be able to invite exploration right applications by 2025. And then the timeframes after that depend on the exploration program.
So the one area where Rob Herzog definitely got it wrong was in the time frame. He was looking at 24 months to 36 months where we could already start getting gas. That doesn't look likely.
No, that's not likely at all in terms of the timelines, not because of anything, not because technically it is impossible. It is because of our legal and regulatory framework. Our legal framework requires us to go through a number of steps before we can license. Then there's the environmental authorization. And if it's challenged, even the timeframes I've put, Alec, will be pushed out. So the timelines are a subject of your regulatory framework. So maybe he was speaking from a point of view of technically what is possible. But if you look at the regulatory framework that we must follow, those are the timelines that I'll put up.
We've got the gas. We've got, hopefully, as you put it, 200 TCFs there, which would be a massive, massive gas resource or a resource for South Africa. And presumably a big step towards addressing the big problem of the moment, which is energy scarcity or indeed electricity scarcity.
Alec, 2 points I want to make and leave your listeners with. The first one is that in our faces sits the risk of electricity supply or the shortage of electricity supply. But I want to put it out to South Africans that the electricity supply problem is a big problem. But an even bigger problem is an energy supply problem. I don't know if you know that the only gas we use in South Africa currently is actually coming from Mozambique. And we know that there is a risk of supply to that. That puts a large part of our industry in the northern part of our country, in Gauteng, KZN. It puts them at risk. So we are likely to see a bigger impact if we don't explore our own resources and we depend on other countries. So it's not an electricity crisis that we're facing. We're facing an energy crisis. And let us not narrow the use of gas to electricity only. Gas can use to as a feedstock to our industries. It can be used, for example, in fertilizer manufacturing and other processes. In terms of heating, for example, it's more efficient to use gas than it is to use electricity. So actually we can make our industries more financially viable and we can help to kickstart this economy. The second point I want to leave your listeners with, Alec, is for me the debate of whether it's 390 TCF, 200 TCF, 13 TCF is a red herring. What would 13 TCF do for this country? Are you aware that as a country, the value that we have from Sasol is actually at the back of 3.5 TCF, 3 TCF from Mozambique? So 13 TCF in the Karoo can create 2 times Sasol's. So let's say we are wrong as the agency and the number is not 200 TCF and the person saying 13 TCF is correct. And lastly, Alec, let's also not allow the red herring of water availability to detract us from making a decision in South Africa and stopping this program from kickstarting our economic recovery. There is a lot of groundwater. So groundwater comes in different phases. There is the groundwater which you can find within, like, for example, 100 meters in the subsurface. That's what we use for consumption. But there is groundwater much deeper than that, which exploration companies can extract for industrial purposes. And people keep telling you that there is no water in the Karoo. There is deeper groundwater which can be, and there is no way any of our municipalities can extract the water that sits deeper than 300 meters for domestic use purposes. So let's allow the people with the deep pockets, with the technical knowledge, to drill in the Karoo, to tell us how they are going to find the water, to actually finalize the studies that we are doing around our groundwater availability. But if we stall these processes through legal challenges, then we'll never know what we missed out and we'll stand in the next few years without any economic recovery, yet we have the resources as a country.
Dr. Pindile Masangani is the Chief Executive of Petroleum Agency SA. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.